Hey friends, it's Asa and we meet again for tonight's HK Happy Hour. 一起八讲是讲非. I'm just gonna go right ahead and talk about Love Matters with Grace. I fell in love with the first episode and I was so happy that I got to see familiar faces on top of the many surprises that were sprinkled in this inaugural episode. And if you're asking why, it's because I was really surprised with the two guests, Andrew Chan and Andrea So. And if you've been keeping up with the podcast, you will know that I love them in the 30-minute sitcom, Come Home Love, Lo and Behold. They bring out their characters, Tornado and Sumyu, in a natural and realistic way that makes you gravitate to them. And it's to a point that I think that they're down to earth and they can literally be your classmate, colleague, or even your neighbor. And because of my perspective, having them being Grace's first guest makes sense because they're relatable people that are able to have genuine, heartfelt conversations. And the best part of it all was Grace tackling on a tough subject, which is bullying. And you really hear Andrea and Andrew's personal take and experiences revolving around this issue. At some point in our lives, we've been bullied. For some, we still continue to be in that vicious cycle due to difficult circumstances. And at times, whether we know it or not, we've also been on the other side and became our worst nightmare by being the bully. I say it's tough because it's such a hard topic to tackle on. And I agree that Grace and her team could have easily stuck to a happier topic. And to me, when we focus on that sphere, we get the opportunity to just glide through on things because you can't go wrong with happy topics, as this allows things to resonate with everyone. But when we talk about the difficult topics like bullying, it creates that awkward silence for our people because we barely even talk about it, so we don't know how to handle things when we actually have to deal with it. And when we really have to work with it, we fall back on doing things that we know by being non-confrontational and non-reactive to bad news and sweeping things under the rug. PK and I work in higher education sector, and one of the toughest parts in education in general is training and being equipped with bullying and EDI. And I will tell you, it's always easy to say, bullying is bad, bullying needs to be stopped. And that gives a standing ovation and everyone can agree with that. But the minute we dive deeper into the topic, that's where things get muddy. And oftentimes when I walk out of seminars or trainings or meetings, I always felt it was 95% fluff on saying things we already know, like superficial statements of how it's wrong and the statistics and just promoting it that it's wrong and we need to do something about it. But the more important stuff on how to handle it, how to address it, how to dismantle it, how to unlearn the old and learn from new best practices and what are the resources for students. And most importantly, how do these resources work so that I'm not just here referring the student to go to the student health services or tell the student to call the hotline and just call it a day. They're just simply not there, but we need to go beyond that. We need to focus on building heuristics, dismantle deficit thinking, and also build a stronger support system for students rather than referring a student to someplace else and expecting that a particular service, if the student actually goes there, will solve their problem. And I implore you to watch the show, especially the first one, because Andrew Chan gives his personal experience about school and it really illustrates an example of deficit thinking in education and how educators and staff can easily, without knowing it, hurt student experiences that can affect them in the long run. And I'm not saying that this is something it is proactively done on purpose. That is not the intention. I argue that deficit thinking is deeply rooted not just in education, but in our families, communities, and society as well. And I'll give you an example that is probably the most common deficit thinking ever that gets practiced often. When it comes to students having family issues, staff and educators treat a student as less than, or is defaulted as having the right of passage to do less, to have less expectation for them because they assume that they will underperform than their fully abled peers that come from a quote-unquote wholesome family. Oftentimes, students get shrugged off or it's automatically assumed that they are sad or they're treated like there's something wrong with them. And we don't know how to deal with it because things like that rarely happens. If a parent passes away, that probability of happening is low on a daily, semester, or yearly basis in a classroom setting. And we're not equipped on knowing how to deal with it when a student comes in with bad news. Instead of judging and putting on a let's feel bad for you mode, how do we go on about with asking how is a student feeling? How can we make sure that the student knows we really mean it when we say, if you need help or want to tell me anything, let me know at any time? How do we create a safe haven for students and see them with high expectations rather than seeing them in a lens with low expectations because we perceive the student going through a difficult time as not being able to perform well in school? My problem with deficit thinking is that it also extends in our families, and we've been there and done that whenever we hear our mom, our dad, our grandparent, or your classmate's parent gossip after class and say, 你冇同 Billy 仔玩啊哈，佢係 bad boy 因為佢媽咪走咗路 or 佢嘅媽咪爹哋離咗婚 or Billy 仔好慘㗎因為佢冇咗媽咪啦佢人生會過得好辛苦㗎And because of this deeply rooted issue of deficit thinking coming from societal and family levels, this comes back as a full cycle where it repeats itself in the educational field where we default back to that narrative and recreate these unnecessary experiences for students again. Because this is what we only know, and it just goes to show that we're not equipped with heuristics on dealing with these issues. Because we're always provided with fluff knowledge without heuristics to work with.Which becomes a disservice to us all, and as you know, history repeats itself. I find it rather more tricky to navigate deficit thinking in education for Asian students, because being put in as a minority model mold for education in STEM is not the issue. Rather, the problem with deficit thinking is the absence of non-STEM careers as a potential for them to be in and excel within that chosen field. One thing that really kills me inside is when you hear Asian students joke, but they're actually not joking when they tell you an update that they're going to follow the Asian stereotype of being an accountant or engineer because they couldn't get into med school or law school, or it's because they have to be in these fields because their parents or relatives want them to. Yet, when you ask them what they really want, most of them can't respond with their own opinion and will avoid it. The absence of not hearing what they want and their absence of voice and their own identity is just frustrating because it really illustrates why it's so hard to break away the minority model in the West and how they perceive us as followers, not leaders. So we're lumped into as not being upper management material and having stereotypes that hurt us like all Asians are rich, Asians are great at math, Asians can't jump, dance, or sing and suck at sports. Because of the systemic stereotype that we have faced by Westerners, we also do that to ourselves, so we take away the potential for Asian students to look beyond non-STEM industries. We proactively take away that thought of them not being able to make it in Hollywood, not being able to make it in the NBA, NFL, not being able to have a concert at Sophie Stadium or win a Grammy Award, unless your BTS, and that you gotta go back to an Asian country to be famous really sets us back to deficit thinking because we don't see ourselves as making it as an athlete or an actor or a singer in USA and Canada. And this is due to micro and macro levels of deficit thinking within our Asian community and outwards in a Eurocentric perspective. This is why, to me, Love Matters with Grace is an important show because it tries to dismantle difficult subjects.Like bullying, and to me it speaks up to things that we battle for us foreign-born kids that have relatable issues, and I hope that Grace Chan gets more opportunity in the show to talk about more tough subjects and try to dismantle them and provide viewers with heuristics on how to work and deal with them. I also hope that there's a Canto-speaking version on the regular TVB channel so that it helps families on navigating these difficult issues that we all go through. So instead of avoiding it, we can really come together as one to figure this out and build families closer together, not apart. And again, this goes back to a full circle of having more TVB series that really revolve on these subjects.And use these scenarios to provide heuristics for families, organizations, and educational institutions to genuinely have conversations and make changes for the better so that we can provide the next generation with tools and positive experiences for them to succeed outside of the hegemonic narratives that have systemically been a disservice for us. On a lighter note, in Oiga Lab World, is Gao Gao taking a break from lab and is filming for another show?I felt like the last few episodes about Gao Gao felt like a lab farewell send-off for her. I don't know what's going on, but I really hope she comes back to lab because I still see it as unfinished business for me. because it was so sudden how she had to be traded off as Max's secretary. And I felt that storyline with Song Soifei and her overall loyalty and Yan Ban is just really mysterious to me. And I'm not going to lie, I always saw her as a villain, but then her character changed into a neutral person. And at times, she has a good side to her. So I just wish more of her personality would have shown, because I just thought she was the next Jenny, but a more Secret Service Jenny where we don't know anything about her and her family. And I low-key at times thought her ultimate goal is to literally hang around the Long family and to bring down their family legacy and business, which is a further approach to how Jenny's dad took away Dai Long Sang's power temporarily. Let us know on Gao Gao's whereabouts for a lab on Instagram at hk.happyhour. And have you guys watched Love Matters with Grace? And what did you like about the first episode? I'm looking forward to reading your responses on Instagram. And until next time, we are going to catch up with y'all on the next HK Happy Hour. Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. This is Asa and I'm signing off. See you next week.